Like many, many, many people, my favorite novel is To Kill a Mockingbird. I think a whole lot of people say, yeah, me too. A lot of people love that. And for some reason, that book is hot right now, I guess because the sequel is supposed to come out in July. But there is a scene in To Kill a Mockingbird toward the end where the two children, Scout and Jim, are headed home in the dark. They can't see very well, and they're a little bit afraid, and they start to hear noises that are frightening them. And so in order to sort of stave off their fear, Scout, who's my favorite character, the little girl, yells out. She thinks it's a friend of theirs, Cecil Jacobs, who is trying to scare them. So she says, well, I'll take care of this. So she yells out, Cecil Jacobs is a big wet hand. She thinks, well, that'll bring him out, you know, and then nothing happens, and they're scared. This way of saying something out loud, or singing it, or shouting it, is a way that we have sometimes of keeping our fears at bay. We're not sure if we're hearing those noises or not, so we make noises of our own to stave off the things that we fear the most. Some people would call this a different version of whistling past the graveyard. You're going past something that is very scary, and so you try to distract your mind by whistling or thinking of something else and hurrying past and pretending you're not afraid. I say all of this because I see our character in the gospel today, Thomas, and I think he has a great deal of fear. And I think the noises that he makes to distract him and to help him forget that fear for a moment, the noises he makes come in the form of questions and demands for proof. Here he is. I think he is afraid of believing that this is Jesus standing before him because he's already experienced this stunning disappointment and fear and danger after Jesus' crucifixion. And so to keep his fear at bay, he demands proof. He says, basically, show me that something is different this time, that I won't be crushed again. Show me that it's real. I can't bear to have my hopes destroyed again. Thomas, our questioning, doubting friend. For all of us, not just Thomas, I think our questions and our doubts can come honestly out of our fear. Fear that the story that sustains us isn't true. Fear that it's true for some, but not for us. Fear that it is true, but we've failed to honor the precious gift of eternity and salvation. Fear of learning that we've spent our time and energy and life force chasing the wrong things. I find it interesting that even people who know absolutely nothing else about the Bible use the description doubting Thomas. I think he gets a bad rep. I would like to describe him a little bit more charitably and call him honest Thomas, because I think he says things that everybody in that room was thinking about, but pretending they weren't thinking about. He says what we all want to say, give me some proof. And Jesus doesn't reject him for that asking for proof. There is a place in Mark's gospel where a man comes to Jesus because the man's child needs healing. And Jesus says, you only have to believe and it will happen. And the man says to Jesus, I believe, help my unbelief. Jesus doesn't turn him away. He doesn't refuse him, saying, well, you don't quite believe very fully, so I'm not going to do what you're asking me to do. He heals the man's child. Jesus doesn't exclude or reject those with doubts or fears, because pretty much all of us have those doubts and fears. Jesus embraces those people. Jesus embraces us. We go along with our human intellect and our psyche and our imagination and all of that thrown in together with our human soul, and we say, how can this be true? What if it isn't? We're afraid to believe, we're afraid not to believe, and so we question and stall and doubt. And make no mistake about it, the other disciples didn't have stronger faith than Thomas's. They had already seen Jesus. We don't know what was in their hearts in their first encounter. We just know that nobody said it out loud. If we could have witnessed this scene with Thomas and Jesus and the others, I think we may have heard a great sigh of relief when he asked for proof, because someone had expressed aloud what everyone else was thinking, or at least had thought at first. In their time and in our time, there are some very few persons who have a strong enough faith that they can rest easy even with their questions. Most of us believe the others get it, and we don't. But I don't believe the others get it any better than we do. I think we're all whistling past the graveyard. Some people have found a way around needing that knowledge. Some people are bluffing. Some are pretending. Some are suppressing questions. Some have a better facade. But all of us have vulnerabilities. All of us have wounds that make us so afraid to believe or not to believe. And as it turns out, not one of us has that secret knowledge of God. Our version of Cecil Jacobs is a big wet hen, the noise we make to distract ourselves from our fear, comes in the form of this demand for proof. And we ask for proof and we want evidence, but we want to be people of faith, so we feel guilty about wanting that evidence. But we don't need to pretend we're without doubt, without fear, without questions. Jesus not only included Thomas, he sought Thomas out and acceded to his needs. All of us here, we come together no longer claiming to have the answers, but telling our stories of the risen Christ to hold each other up in our belief and our unbelief. We voice our doubts honestly as Thomas did, as the Father did coming to Jesus in Mark's gospel. We ask our questions. We express doubt and fear. I believe. Help me. Help my unbelief. My Lord and my God. We ask these questions we can never answer. How is it that a man being tortured and killed can say, Father, forgive them? How is it that that same man killed at Golgotha now stands before us and among us? How is it that God enters the closed, locked rooms of our lives when we were convinced that God was dead? In this life and this community of faith, we honestly say to one another about God, I don't understand. I'm scared. I have my doubts. How can this be true? We say our fears aloud, and we eventually learn that God doesn't discard us, but embraces us with all of our sing-song efforts to show that we're not afraid. God came to us in the locked and closed rooms of our hearts and brought us a peace that passes understanding. If I'm honest, I will say that I have questions. Hundreds of fearful, hesitating questions about all that God has done and all that God can do. How is this possible? How can it be true? What if it isn't? But we know Jesus has been killed and has asked forgiveness for the man who wielded the hammer and nails. Jesus has risen and come to us in these closed rooms of our doubting and fearful hearts. and still we're scared. What are those noises I'm hearing? I'm going to whistle my way past this graveyard. I won't let old Cecil Jacobs scare me. I have Thomas to comfort me when the noises start to calm. I have God who embraces me and my questions. My Lord and my God, I believe. Help my unbelief. Amen.